From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 14th day of February, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at agmarket.net. Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services will be here to discuss the ag energies, and we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, we'll hear from four farmers around the planet and how they view free trade and competition with American farmers, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn for the day settled at $6.82 1/4. It was down 2 3/4. The May at $6.79 3/4, 2.5 lower. And December futures at $5.97 3/4, up a penny for the day. March soybeans at $15.37 1/2, 5 1/4 lower. The November at $13.83, down a penny and 3/4. Bean meal futures up, down $3 for the day. Bean oil, 26 cents higher. Wheat futures, soft red at $7.86, down 6 cents. The hard red down 6 1/4 at 906. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $164.67 1/2, 42 1/2 cents lower. Feeders down 55 at 186.65, and lean hogs at 87.25, 90 cents higher. Wayne Nelson from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Hey, you know, we're just 3 weeks away from the all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. So looking forward to having you and the rest of the crew up on stage to talk about the marketplace. I hope you are, too.
You know, looking forward to this like usual. It's been a lot of fun for a lot of years, and it's going to be a great time to get together and see and a lot of our longtime listeners, some of our new listeners. And it's just always fun to see all the people in the crowd and say hi and talk to them and see what's going on in their world.
You know, farmers usually wait. They've been doing a pretty good job this time around at getting themselves registered. Not good enough yet, but we're getting closer. If you want to register, you can do that online at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, because, of course, this is part of the Farm Doc team events as well. Tell me what happened in Chicago today, please, Wayne.
Well, we started off, a little pretty good here in the corn and wheat, a little bit down on the beans today, but then the CPI number come on out, and it come out up 0.5%. The guess was 0.4%, and of course that was a little bit negative. The economy, as such, talking about the dollar, you know, took it a little more on the year on that one, and also just thinking that the interest rates are going to go up again just because of that. And, you know, we were sort of hoping to see the interest rates, you know, hold steady rather than see an increase next month. But this sort of puts the feeling out there that we're going to put a little pressure on the financial market by doing this.
And the Federal Reserve, of course, had said that they wanted to slow interest rate rises. They had been doing halves, and then they started doing quarters. Is the idea still that they'll go 0.25 point?
I think the next one will probably be 0.25 point, Todd. The difference being is we'll maybe get 0.25 point and another 0.25 point to make it 0.5 point gain, where we're hoping for maybe just 0.25 point, not next month, but the down the road a little bit from that. So just a little bit negative on that.
And then what are you watching around the planet as it relates to the Argentine or Brazilian crops, or maybe Ukraine, Russia?
You know, Michael Cordonier dropped another million metric tons on the Argentine bean crop. He's down at 36 million metric tons now. The USDA, 41 last report. You know, and he left Brazil's steady at 151 on his estimates, but the USDA was at 153 last time. So we continue to drop that Argentine crop back a little bit. Looks like, they did get some rain over the weekend, but the next couple weeks look very dry, and it looks like we're going to continue to see a little bit of erosion in that market down there. Now, one of the things we're looking at here, it's the first time in 19 months that the Brazil bean basis turned less than positive basis down there. So the Brazil farmers are combining away, and they are selling their beans right now. So a little weaker basis down there. Of course, that makes us a little less competitive than we were. So, sort of not good news for us as far as the bean export business.
The harvest market for them. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with agmarket.net. Last Friday, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, along with the Global Farmers Network, set up an interview for a few of its members to talk with farmers from around the planet. We closed with this question: how do they, as farmers in other nations, view American competition?
For me, as a European farmer, as a German farmer, I think it's fair, yes.
That was Markus Holketter from Germany. He was one of four farmers from around the planet that were on the NAFB call. And while it was hard to understand, he said that he thought the trade was fair. So did the farmer from Argentina. Her name was Maria Pilo Garrado.
So do I. And I think that we have a very good experience as South American farmers and producers with American farmers and producers advocating for our production, mostly for our soybean and their sub-products and also the use of GMOs, you know, and other technologies. I think perhaps the only thing that we should strengthen and deepen that relationship.
So Pilu, the Argentine farmer, like the German farmer, thought trade was fair and specifically mentioned GMOs in the hopes that they would be able to use them more fully in the future. There was a different view of trade from Africa in Nigeria from Patience Koku. She is also a farmer, but has a different set of economic problems to deal with. She does grow soybeans in Nigeria.
I think it's fair agriculturally that if you produce efficiently, you could sell your surplus, basically. But I just always believe that there needs to be a balance. And then, you know, African countries need to up their game in terms of production so they can even have something to bring to the table to trade in order to get that balance.
So Patience, the farmer from Nigeria, also pegged the trade as fair across the planet, but is hopeful that Africa will have more goods to trade in the future. The farmer from Mexico, Guillermo Britton, had an interesting take. He went back to the 1990s to talk about NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is now USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement.
We have, since NAFTA, about 30 years of treatment. I think the best economies from Mexico has been being part of that negotiations in the past. I think we have a fair platform to do a strong agreement. And I think it's fair because we have very the conditions are very very good for both parts, and there are an equilibrium in different commerce things, in cars and feeding, you know, it's agreement in both sides, and I think it's fair and it's important for our country and for United States as well.
That was the farmer from Mexico. He talked about the equilibrium that NAFTA, the USMCA, has brought, not only for agricultural goods as it relates to trade across the three countries, the United States, Mexico, and Canada, but also as it relates to commerce, in particular for him, automobiles. Our thanks go to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting for setting up the interview with the four farmers from the Global Farmers Network. Each Tuesday, we check in on the agricultural energies. This week, we're joined by Stephen Platt from Archer Financial Services. Hi, Steve. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it's great being here.
So how have things changed since we last talked to you about the agricultural energies and crude oil and the economy across the planet?
It's something new almost every day, it feels. The crude oil price has traded in a range, really, since really December, when we reached a low near $70, and a high of $82.50 only a couple weeks ago. The 100-day, it's kind of interesting. We've been drifting up above and below the 100-day average, which currently is at 79.84 on the March contract. Diesel and gasoline have really weakened more than the crude market when it has gotten weaker, and are selling off of their highs with respect to margins established near Christmas. Gasoline has actually shown a little bit better support than diesel. So overall, we've had a kind of mixed tone in the market with a upside bias more in crude than the products. Nat gas has languished under $3 here and is currently trading near 250 basis the March as delays to reopening the Freeport site, which is a big LNG plant down in Texas, led to a rebuilding of inventories because they have not been able to export as much LNG as they would have expected. This has really given a boost to inventories of nat gas, which is important in terms of urea and fertilizers, which many use as a key component, along with electricity. Electricity prices have gone down dramatically here from over 150 per megawatt hour in December to as low as 37 currently for Western Hub, which is a key connection point in terms of power. CPI came out here just today. We got some news on the gasoline and electricity prices. They show still increases, which I thought was a little bit surprising, and it does show some pretty strong lags. The gasoline has pretty much held up. It's up a couple percent from last month. Fuel oil was down slightly, and electricity was up. So I still feel overall for some of these key components, not necessarily gasoline, but some of these other components, we are going to get some price breaks. The question is how quickly the wholesale prices actually come down to and retail prices to consumers. So there's been a variety of forces impacting at least the petroleum complex here. Today, it was the announced release of 26 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The DOE had considered canceling the sale, which was part of the mandate last year, but decided to in response to the Russian action last week, which cut production by over 500,000 barrels from where they said they would target. In addition, you had the Turkish quake that provided a lot of uncertainty in terms of supplies to the port of Kayan, which is an important part for shipping out Iraqi crude and Kazakhstan as well. So that's was a big factor. So as I said, a lot of things have happened. In the background remains the U.S. production levels, They look like they are increasing from shale formations in addition, or offshore activity has also increased. Chinese demand recovery remains in the background. The question is, how quick will it be and what impact it will have on demand? You've seen steady increases from the reporting agencies, OPEC and IEA, attributing their increases in demand to the Chinese recovery. The IEA just last month indicated half the increase in demand in this coming year will be attributed to China. U.S. stock levels have improved dramatically. That, I think, is a function of somewhat weaker than expected demand. The Cushing delivery point has seen sharp increases in their inventory levels. So overall, supply availability here has been generally quite good. Price prospects, I guess, looking forward, is going to be contingent upon a variety of forces. Certainly the Chinese recovery is going to be a big factor, and U.S. monetary policy, in light of the numbers, are still showing a high interest rate environment. Whether it does exact pressure on the U.S. economy still remains to be seen. So I still think overall, Todd, that we're looking at a deficit in terms of the economy, assuming we don't fall in recession, which I think is a low probability, probably more so than many people think. But it will certainly be contingent upon a lot of different forces. Another factor is the war in Ukraine. Russia is hurting. I think in terms of some of the policies that have been put in force, they certainly are running up their budget deficits, and the internal population is certainly feeling the effects of the war in Ukraine. The question is, will they ever want to come to the negotiating table without leadership change? So that's always in the background as a potential too, that could possibly exert some pressure on prices if it does in fact ever occur.
It's always interesting to talk to you. Thank you so much. I know you understand these things deeply, and we appreciate you sharing that knowledge with us.
Well, thank you. And thank you to your listeners as well.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. We check the agricultural energies each and every Tuesday here at willag.org. Don't forget to visit that website where today you can register for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's Tuesday, the 7th day of March. The cost is just $30. The Farm Doc team will be there, the agricultural economist from the U of I, along with many of the analysts that you hear on our air each and every business day of the year. Join us in Covington, Indiana at the Beef House for the All-Day Ag Outlook on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. The cost is just $30. Register online at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast on this Tuesday with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. I hope the weather for you has been as good over the last week as it has been here in East Central Illinois.
Well, we've had some glimmers of some nice weather, that's for sure. But we're also finding out that winter's not over.
Well, winter is not over. I do want to check in Kansas. The wheat crop there, hard red winter wheat growing regions, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, has suffered through some really dry conditions. There have been a little rainfall. What do you see coming up for them?
Well, finally, there's going to be some, I'd call it a decent amount of snowfall. It's going to be mostly snow coming on in here over the next 48 hours. And it's going to go into areas that have been missing these storms. If you were to use Interstate 70 kind of as a dividing line, most of the winter storms have been north of that interstate so far this winter, leaving areas along I-70, along the Interstate 40, a little bit drier, a lot drier. But there's going to be anywhere from a half to three quarters of an inch of water, maybe upwards to an inch of water, which is going to be about 6 to 12 inches of snow over the western and southwest counties of Kansas and southeast areas of Colorado, parts of the panhandle of Oklahoma as well. This will be the best precipitation event they've seen, well, I think in probably 2 or 3 months at least. So that'll be good news for them. And then there's going to be rain spreading out east of this storm across many areas of the central, southern, and eastern Corn Belt, snow on the northwest side of it. So it depends on what side of the system you're on in terms of how the snow is going to go. The snow is going to be most prevalent in Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, far northern Illinois, and southern Wisconsin, where it could be rather significant.
It's significant in terms of how much snowfall do you think will come?
Well, there's going to be a long, narrow strip going from Kansas through eastern areas of Nebraska, Iowa, then across southern Wisconsin, that there's going to be 6 to 12 inches. I wouldn't be surprised if there are pockets of a few more inches of snow there. So it's going to be a rather solid and long stretching area across that northwest Corn Belt where that snow will fall.
Will we get cold enough weather for the rest of February into March for that to stick around for a while, or will it dissipate?
Well, it's going to be, we call this a little bit of weather whiplash. What has been the case all winter has been the coldest weather this winter has been bottled up in the western United States, from really the western High Plains and Rockies to California. It's been a cold winter in those areas. Now, I know most of the rest of the United States, especially parts of the Midwest and East, hasn't been nearly as cold. And I think the perception is, it's been like that everywhere. But that really hasn't been the case. And what we're going to see here over the next 2 or 3 weeks is there's going to be more episodes of cold, mostly focused in the West, but pushing across the Midwest at times as these cold surges first come into the West, push south and east. And what this is going to result in is some ups and downs. So we're going to kind of run the gamut. We'll have 3 or 4 days of warmer weather, the 3 or 4 days where there's still an opportunity to get quite cold. And we're going to see that as early as later this weekend and this weekend. The warm, you know, relatively warm and mild rainy weather will turn a whole lot colder, and you're really going to notice this by Friday in the weekend.
Well, thanks for reminding me it's mid-February. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good.
Indeed, that's Don Day. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, where you can sign up on our website right now at willag.org for the Tuesday, March 7th, All-Day Ag Outlook. Details are there. It should be a great show. I hope you will take the time to join us in Covington, Indiana.